Welcome, everyone. I'm David.
This is one of those flashback moments, right?
Test.
Two.
Three.
Test.
Hello?
Good, no echo. Hi, I'm David Conrad, the ICANN CTO, and this is the third session in the How It Works tutorials. This one is put on, what's your title? Of your talk, not your title, specifically, yeah.
This is Registry Protocols.
Okay, so this session is on Registry Protocols. These How It Works tutorials originated at the Buenos Aires meeting, the last meeting that ICANN held. The intent here is to provide the ICANN community with a sort of more knowledge about the protocols and technologies that we use here. This session will be given by Ed Lewis, who is one of the members of the Office of the CTO. So he actually reports to me, so if he messes up, I'll be able to beat him over that immediately. If anyone has any questions... Wouldn't be the first time, yeah. Please direct them at Ed. And with that, I will hand it over to Ed for this session. Thank you.
Okay, so this How It Works is about the protocols and the registry speaks. But to give a good introduction to that, I'll talk a little bit about together in general. Then we'll get into what the protocols are going to be. So we can go to the next slide. So we're going to first define and focus us ourselves. And next slide. Excuse me. Okay, so I like to start with going to the dictionary. So we start out with regular words. What's a registry? A registry is just a place that lets you register a list of whatever you want to do. It's, like I say, Merriam-Webster has its official records are kept, or it's a booking an official list. Now, in this... First thing we're going to narrow down into is something called domain name registries. The thing that we're going to keep track of are domain names. There are many other kinds of things you can do in the registry, but domain names are the ones we will look at. Now, the domain name registry is going to be a registry of domain names and how they are put to use and so on. And so, this tutorial, I'm going to concentrate on just one kind of domain name registry, which is probably the one that is most visible. That's for a top-level top-level domain name registry. Now, other kinds of registries to keep in mind, if you start thinking about what a registry does, there are RIRs, the regional internet registries. They keep track of internet numbers, the addresses, the routing system, the routing parameters. They're the protocol parameter registries that IANA is running. They're just, this number means this in this field of this protocol, and there's like 2,000 of those, plus the week from the previous tutorial. There are also other kind of registries out there that have similar functions, and things like land, who owns land in a country. Motor vehicles, who owns that car, license plates, driver's license, and all that is all. Finally, gift registries, who gets to give what to somebody. All of these things are just a list of here's an object, and here's what we're doing with that object, and that's all this is all about in registries. The next slide. Now, in the DNS tree, there are different kinds of registries to keep in mind. First, there's the root, the root DNS. That's the registry that's being managed in IANA that has the list of all the TLDs out there that you hear so much about at ICANN meetings. One level down, we have the TLDs themselves, and they're broken into different kinds of TLDs. All of these TLDs do essentially the same thing. A domain name belongs to somebody, or they're responsible for that domain name, and here's how that information is. I have GTLD, CCTLD, IDNCCTLD, and other TLD listed up there. G is generic TLDs, those are .com, .net, .org, and so on. CCTLDs belong to country codes, .ie, for example. IDN CCTLDs are the strings written in non-ASCII writing systems that represent country codes out there. And there's other TLDs. They're just other ones that are just harder to classify at this point. And they've been around forever or whatever the reason's out there. All those TLDs below them generally have just registrations to private organizations that get to use the internet for or not. So let's go to the next slide. Service level definition of a top level domain. Next. Now there are one thing to get into so the reason why anyone uses a protocol in life is to communicate with somebody else. So what I want to do here is take a look at who do TLDs talk to? What are the internal bodies that they talk to? So you can understand why they have a protocol, what the protocol is trying to accomplish, what's the reason for talking in the protocol's definitions. In this first slide here, I have a picture of the TLD registry, the big can there, it's a big database of things. And in front of it, it has a thing, let's start with registrants. The registrants are names given to those people who who own or want or get allocated a name. Yeah, they're companies or individuals that get a name in a TLD. Now, they may go through a reseller, which is someone who just basically retails out those names for the amount of time that they get the name. And below that, the next step closer is a registrar. And the registrar are the companies, hear a lot about it, ICANN also, whose job is to retail names out from the one wholesale TLD out there. TLDs are pretty much run as a central area of allocating names. Referee for who gets a name, puts in the database. Lots of rules for them. To allow this to be a more competitive environment, we have many registrars that will talk to the TLD to say, here's a name I've just sold. Please put it in. One thing I will say that's not on the slide that would be on some people's slides and probably should be on ours too is the role of the DNS operator. The DNS operator is another supplier to the registrant that may have an impact on the system here, but we don't have that represented here because in ICANN we have a formalized DNS operator to the TLD registry interface. That's a bit broken down, a little bit easier to get between the two, but we want to point out that we don't have that in this slide. The next slide. Now, another side, it's not just the other side, there's another side to this, and these are the organizations that are involved with making sure that TLDs are able to be a reliable, trustworthy place to keep track of things. If everybody goes to Steve over there, we're going to pick on Steve a lot today, and I tell Steve, remember this for me, and Steve goes out and has lunch and sees Dr. Jameson, Dr. Guinness, and doesn't come back, lost everything. So we want to have someone who's backing Steve up in this game here, and this is what this slide's about. That TLD registry operator, while they're working with trying to remember what they're being told by people on the other previous slide, here they're trying to store in things like data escrow and also doing some trademark protection of this stuff. On the other side, these are support function TLDs that are being run out there. And this is another important part of TLD registry operations, which doesn't get a lot of limelight, a lot of exposure to it, but it's very necessary to making this a reliable system. The next slide. And, of course, the TLD registry is also talk to everybody. They touch the general Internet population. When a name is put into a registry, it's registered there, that means that's now I know who it belongs to. But that's not useful to the general Internet until they're being told, this name, go there. If I want to look up a website, I have to know where to go. So the TLD registry actually has an entire part of it, and probably the largest visible TLD operations is running the servers that let people know what it's keeping track of there, the DNS, the domain name system, and also the Whois system who want to find out who's knocking on my door. Now, in the talk, after this, it's going to be kind of a laundry list talk where I go through a bunch of different things, and they're laid out here. These are the six protocols that I'm going to be talking about. First, just to go around the circle, there's EPP, Extensional Provision Protocol. There's DNS and DNSSEC, or two more. Whois protocol, the RDAP protocol, the Data Escrow protocol, and a Trademark Clearinghouse. And those are going to be coming up not in any order that you see on the slide, just drawn out this way. First, we'll talk about the DNS name system. Go to the next slide. What is it? You've most likely coming to an ICANN meeting, you've probably at least heard of DNS. What it is, it's a lookup, not a search system. It's a lookup system. I have something I want to know about. I want to know about this name. What do I want to know about it? I want to know maybe the address. What's the address of the website at this name? I look things up for information, and the response is simple. It's either here's the address you want, the information you asked for, or no, it doesn't exist. It's not there. Just no. Next slide. It's one of the earliest protocols on the internet. It's not the earliest. It's one of the early ones. The fact that it comes from a very long time ago, which is an impact on the way it's put together and the way we try to improve the protocol itself. It's proven to be such an integral part of the system that we just can't uproot it that easily, though many people would like to at times. The entire realm of domain name registries, the entire industry that we're talking about, exists because of the DNS. It's trying to manage what goes in and out of the DNS. What the DNS means for a registry, it's the most visible part, being up or down, basically if their DNS is running or not. The DNS is probably not the most central part of a registry's functions, but it is the most visible piece, highest profile protocol we have, and it approaches being an element in the way things are running out there. It's by far the most used protocol out of the TLD. It's untold numbers of people to rely on this. We don't really have a roster of all the people who ask questions. We can tell But even that's filtered by the protocols put together. And the sender of the queries are fairly anonymous. And in a block diagram, the orange bubbles here are things external to a TLD. The blue are inside the TLD. Agent of the registrar will register information with the registration side, which filters through the database, down to the DNS server. And that DNS server is now going to speak the DNS protocol. IAN is up there also because IAN is involved with the setup of this. And in a sense that when a TLD gets granted and put in a root zone, the name server is set up and operation role for IAN here. Components of DNS, there's authoritative servers, and that's what the TLD is running, authoritative servers. There are also recursive servers, which are essentially middle boxes inside the system. And then there are stubs and clients out there which actually are doing the app. And if you stack this up, you see the DNS server from the previous slide speaks the DNS protocol. It speaks it to recursive servers generally, that they turn around and speak the same protocol, the same DNS protocol out to whoever's asking for this information. DNS protocol is much larger than just the TLD operator. Slide is the next set of slides is going to be DNSSEC. Now, what the previous graphic showed was that there's intermediaries between the blue bubble on top, which TLDs run, and where people. For this reason, the DNS has to be secured. In a lot of places, when you are on a website, go right to the website and use a point end-to-end security by encrypting. DNS doesn't have that. We don't have an end-to-end connection between those using the information. Those so, DNSSEC was something that had to come up to help protect the data as it flowed through the DNS system to the endpoint. DNS data is transferred in the open, so we had to attach some way of providing kind of like a digital checksum, a digital signature, people could verify that they got the right stuff. Now, end-to-end encryption like HTTPS isn't a solution here because you don't have connections all the way through the system. The history of DNSSEC, it was developed in the 90s. It was workshopped with operators through about 2004, and that's when the first documents came out of the IETF behind the protocol. It hung around for a couple of years as there, didn't get a lot of attention, until a researcher named Dan Kaminsky called The End of the Cache as We Know It, which basically said that there are so many ways to abuse the fact that DNS is not end-to-end, it's intermediary pieces, you need something to do something about this, and that's when DNSSEC kind of here. In 2009, it appeared in the first TLD out there. Sweden was the first to sign their zone. And by 2010, the root zone was also using DNSSEC. Next slide. Approach is the data that is being transferred is accompanied by a digital signature. To validate that, you need a public key. The public key is going to be available through the DNS, and it must also be trusted. This is all based on public key cryptography. And public cryptography boils down to I have a pair of keys that work in conjunction with each other. If I encrypt something with one key, the other one back and forth, these two are tied together mathematically. One of those keys, and I give it to everybody, that's the public key. I take the other key and make it a private key. And the idea is that if I sign it with a private key and you can validate it with a public key, you know I had to have signed it with the key that's private. The only one has that private key. Through that, plus chaining these keys together, we've made a scalable, trustable network, a framework for this protocol. And the hierarchy that's used is matching the DNS tree that we're protecting. What does the registry do? The registry has to manage its own keys. It's in charge of the keys that it uses. It has to be able to accept registrants, something called a DS record, a DNSSEC record that helps chain these keys back and forth. The TLD signs these records. It publishes them as if they're their own. And another big part of this is signing the negative answers. And it sounds kind of weird to mention that as a primary piece of work, but signing negative answers is a lot of work. A lot of time has gone into saying no. Because it's hard, because basically in DNS, I would say no to you by saying, here's an empty answer. There's nothing to see. And you can't sign nothing. You have to sign something. You have to say something to sign it. And finally, the last part is interacting with IANA at all times to make sure that they're DNSSEC data, in fact, their DS record for the TLD, correct in the root zone. So they have to now interact more with IANA than they used to. And then block diagrams here, they're not exactly the same order, but again, the registrar through the agent of the registrant registers names, registers actually DNSSEC data. Through the registry database to the DNS server, now comes DNSSEC. DNSSEC isn't a completely different protocol in DNS. It's an addition of some records, some same server set, and the same network. This week, there are two sessions that are geared to DNSSEC. One is a beginner's guide for everybody. That's actually going to be in about a couple hours from now.
Tomorrow.
I'm sorry, it's tomorrow, Monday, 5:30 to 7. And on Wednesday, there's a day-long, almost day-long workshop on DNS, a lot of presentations. By the way, if there are any questions about this material, just stop me. Go ahead. We got the remote people, I think.
Thanks. My name is Brian Aitchison. I'm with ICANN Operations. You talked about DNSSEC and this kind of validation key. Is this something that I, as an end user of the internet, would see or that I would know about? How does that sort of relate to my?
Sure. Yeah. Since I was talking about TLDs, I kind of glossed over that. But as someone who's using DNSSEC, someone receiving the data. In order to do the validation of DNSSEC, you would have to get a copy of the public key that ICANN has put out. There are other options, but basically, yeah, you'd want to have the key that ICANN is producing for this whole process, which is actually not something that would be related to TLD operations. But so the next protocol I'm going to cover is WHOIS. WHOIS is ancient also. It predates DNS. It was around before that. The job of WHOIS is basically who is the person who has this IP address? Who is the person that has domain name? It's a way of identifying the operator at the other side of the internet. That's the purpose of WHOIS. It's very simple. It's a simplistic question and answer protocol. It came up in a time when this was all research oriented. Everyone knew about what was going on out there. And basically, it was essential to keep the network together to know everything. Now, the WHOIS protocol's definition is pretty much this entire slide. It's just on this slide. DNS is a very complex protocol. This is a very simple one. Open a connection to a certain place, you send a question, you receive an answer, and you close the connection. What that question is and what the answer is never really defined. It's just whatever it is, it's defined by whoever's running the connection and text going back and forth. Now, TLD, it's registry database, feeds the WHOIS server, which speaks the WHOIS protocol out to clients. The orange clients are being run by anybody out there. The blue blows the TLD. Now, where do we start with the problems of the WHOIS? Probably aware WHOIS is kind of a topic of discussion in an ICANN meeting. First thing is this freeformness. When you have, just send a question, just get an answer back, that's not very helpful to interoperability. If you're trying to write software that uses this stuff, whatever is the worst thing to try to do in a requirements. Whatever, just write it. Very hard to do that. The second thing out there, too, is that the original spec basically assumed ASCII. Everything was the 26 letters, upper and lowercase, whatnot. There was no consideration for international names and anything, non-U.S. basically names at the time. For those who are writing ball or deploying this, there were no other kinds of answers out. No other meta answers out there. There's no way to redirect people to another place. WHOIS assumed everything was in one database. That's kind of a bad idea for deployment. We couldn't say I don't have that answer. Go somewhere else. DNS had that, but not the WHOIS protocol. Differentiated access was impossible. Because you didn't know everyone was the queriers. Whether or not you want to do or not do brain access is one issue, but with the WHOIS protocols is today, you just cannot do it. And finally, there was no way to validate the data in the answers. Since everything was free form, not even postal addresses had to be in a form that was verifiable. You couldn't tell. Next slide. There are two sessions here for WHOIS in the week. The WHOIS Review Team International Registration Data Expert Working Group is going to meet. You've got to go fast for that. And second is the thick WHOIS policy implementation will be on Wednesday morning from 8 to 9:15. That's another place where they're talking about how to redo WHOIS the way it is today. And WHOIS? EPP is a extensible provisioning protocol. Sorry.
Why is it called
thick? Okay, so in the world of the way things have laid out, there are two kinds of models for registering. Actually, can you go back to the third or fourth slide that showed registrants and way up in the beginning? That's it. So when the registrant comes and says, "I want a name," go to a resell to a registrar. The registrar will say, "My customer is so and so. They want to buy this name." Now, they have to turn around and tell the TLD that this name is now going to be used. Now, the question here is thin versus thick, where it comes into. If the registry is thick, it has all the information the registrar has. The registrar says, here is this domain name. Here is where it's going to be located in the name server. Here is the person. Here's their admin contact. Here's all the information that belongs to the registry, meaning they have all the information thick. If they decide to have a, if it's a thin registry out there, that the reseller only, the registrar only tells the registrar, here's the domain name, and here are the names, sir. And then if anything else you want to know, come back to me and I'll fill in the rest. So that thin refers to what does the registry itself contain. So, okay, see if you can kind of flip back to where we were. If you're, so that thick whois policy, that was saying is that they want to take all of the thin registries out there and make them act like thick whois' purposes. It's kind of a complex. One of the problems, one of the issues in whois is that the word whois has gone from being just the protocol being a euphemism for the entire registration system. So they're trying to make the whois protocol act as if everything was a whois for the whois protocol's purposes. Okay, so EPP. EPP is a business-to-business protocol, meaning that it goes between companies that have a prearranged agreement. Whois and DNS were part of anonymous protocols out there. Anyone can ask the question. In EPP, you have to have an agreement between the two sides. The purpose of EPP is to edit the registration database, add, delete, modify domain names, contact information, transfer, and just about anything else that involves the business of registering names out. This was built about 15 years ago. I think I have a slide coming on the history of this. It was taken from experience with other registration systems and together pretty much early on from some ICANN work. In 2003, it was developed in the IETF as a working group. It was based on the earlier protocols that came from the Common Net experience. There was something called RRP at the time that's been modified, and it's actually got pretty much, I think, gone away, and EPP has taken over for it. In the IETF, for the next about 6 years, it became a full standard, which is kind of rare in the IETF. It actually became something and finished the entire process of reviews. It has been mandated for all the GTLDs and STLDs, ones that ICANN oversees. I'm not sure if it's total or most at this point. I'm not sure if everything's come under agreements. It's hard to say because the agreements apply until they wear out. We're not sure with some of the other TLDs where they stand. As far as CCTLDs, they have not been required. CCTLs, of course, are not under the review of IEEE. Nevertheless, a lot of the CCTLDs saw as this went on that this was a pretty good idea. The protocol actually worked pretty well, and they've adopted this protocol in their ways. Currently, the IETF, there is a new working group which is managing the extension part of this. The E in EPP is extensible. And some people have been mad that it's been too extensible. Many people have written extensions to do the same thing many different ways, and so we're trying to come back down to let's just have fewer extensions to manage right now. Now the EPP does not do an exclusive piece of work. It's one way to cause edits to happen to the registration database. It doesn't mean you can't have something else, and I've worked at registries that do have other ways of doing this. Maybe one a helper to other things. Now, there's a policy out there. Policies are all over the place here in registries. They run by certain rules. That may be setting whether they use EPP or not. It's not a technical barrier. Now, the EPP protocol uses TLS, or a strongly secured transport layer. We actually spend time looking at what's underneath the protocol. It's going to be a strong area. It's encoded in XML because that was the way things were done back in the day. It was defined. XML is extensible markup language. It's probably not the most advanced today, but it is what it is then. And the server sits inside the registry. And again, the diagram down below there shows that the client of EPP belongs to the registrars. And generally, the registrars will run their clients, and they will send the queries in through EPP to the EPP server at a TLD to ask for a domain name to be registered or to modify a domain name. And about this EPP, RDAP. The registration data access protocol. This is basically a new version of whois. Query response protocol to inspect the registration's database. It's basically solved a lot of the problems that whois had. It's just been defined. It was minted by the IETF in the last few months. It's built on top of S, the latest way to do protocols. We use a lot of web developed technology. Next slide. Server, which parses the queries, it looks information up in the database and it prepares a response. Client is a web browser. API. It's a lot of abilities built into it, and it can perform authentication steps. The history is that there was dissatisfaction with whois amongst the RIRs, and so a couple of the RIRs went off and decided they were going to look for a better way to report on IP addresses and other routing parameters. They had a very successful experiment with a web-based approach, which is what kind of F. From that beginning, RDAP is very much closely tied to being a whois. and very closely tied to the way the HTTPS. And one other fallout there was that it really drove the commonality, common elements of registering names and numbers. The two are not that different between the two sides of the three, the DNS, the number side and the name side, although the policies are quite a bit different between the sides. The query looks a lot like a URL. It's a formalized version of a question, which response comes back over HTTPS. It uses JSON, JavaScript object notation. It's a formalized way of saying what the answer is, and it lets people now parse the answer back in a programmatic way. With WHOIS, you had to read it on the screen or scrape it and decide what it meant. This actually has a formal. There's also a way to redirect someone saying, don't ask me, ask somebody else. I may not have that name in my area, but I know who would have that for you somewhere else. What's remaining now, this protocol has just been created out there. In a lot of places, an operational profile is being defined for how do we actually take the specification and make a real thing. Next step. It has a defined data model. It's expansion friendly with the queries and response formats. We know how to add things to that. It can go beyond ASCII. That's one of the chief things we want to do. We can distribute the data sources. It's not just one database for all of this. It's not assumed to be one database. We can have differentiated access, meaning that we can give people passwords to certain parts of it, find what that model is going to be. You don't have to have that, but you have the option of having that now with RDAP. And it's a more modern protocol. It's more compatible with the current way that software engineering is done. And here, RDAP client speaks the RDAP protocol to the message handler, which goes to the database. Actually, before you go, the arrow there is intentionally going from the database to the message handler. There's not a way to update. It's not an update protocol. It's a read-only protocol. And this week, on Wednesday morning, there's a session on the RDAP implementation, and they're discussing an operational profile. They're discussing the operational profile for RDAP or for ICANN's purposes. Data escrow. Data escrow it's a way to take what's in the register of domain names and who's responsible for them, store them somewhere at a third party's location in a way that's safe. Everyone agrees is safe. You know, why would you do this? Operator failure. If a TLD goes out of business, suddenly it's shut down, it fails for some other reason, we have another copy of it somewhere else. We potentially could allow the TLD to be restarted by somebody else with this information, assume it all. The storage third party has strict rules for access. It's not just a copy. It's actually a regulated way of keeping track of this data. It's put somewhere. There are certain rules under which the data can be retrieved. Now, the history, there was a IETF session where they just tried to see if the IETF was interested in talking about this protocol. It was in 2010 or so, give or take a year. The IETF was not interested in this. This doesn't mean the protocol is unimportant. It just meant that the IETF wasn't interested in looking at this because, frankly, it's kind of a simplistic thing to do. How do I just copy what's in my database to a third party and deal with it? Very simple, but it's very important and very specific. We really have a lot of general ideas that need to be discussed in the IETF. As a result, the data escrow definition exists in two places, or it's in two parts. One is in a framework, which is in a document that's not quite an IETF RFC. I think they're kind of working on trying to get that done anyway as an individual. The timing of this, which is an entirely different issue, which is like, when do you do this, is in specification 2 of the registry agreements out there, at least for the new TLDs. What it is basically is a dump of the database, XML version, and one or more files is most likely where. It's compressed and encrypted to keep the cost for storage down. Every day a deposit's made, and every week there's a full dump of what's in there and so on, so that the registries actually are able to make these deposits every day. It's important because if they go down, we don't want to go back days to see what was the last. So this shows the block diagram with the registry operator on the left. To the escrow agent, it deposits public keys because everything assigned is encrypted. Full deposit and incremental deposits go across, and the notification saying we've made the deposit. And to ICANN on the bottom, notification and public keys go off with there, but not the deposit itself. We just get ICANN gets notified that it was made to make sure that it's being made consistently. And we also have a copy of the public keys in case ICANN has a reason to go and ask for that. I guess actually before I did escrow, data escrow is something that I've seen mostly involved with ICANN registries, but when I presented this last time, some people said other CCTLs are also picking up this too, as they realize there's an importance to the data. They want to make sure there's a third party that's also managing copies of these across the board, not just in the ICANN realm, but just about all realms of the TLDs out there on the internet. TMCH, Trademark Clearinghouse. This is another support protocol, which has been fine mostly in the ICANN area. But again, I've also heard that the ideas here have been adopted to some other country codes too. Open, but mostly specific to ICANN mechanism for recognizing when a trademark term is being registered in a company name dot whatever is what they're looking for here. Now, in this few slides I have here, I'm just the registry touching part of the protocol, because this actually involves a trademark clearinghouse. It involves other elements out there. I'm going to stick to what does the registry have to do here to keep it as simple. There are two phases that are involved in TLD. TLD is created from nothing. They go through a couple of things like sunrise and trademark claim. Sunrise is what do you do when you begin operations? Then you do trademark claim, period of time where I want to let the trademark holders know that I have a new TLD out there. And there are other phases out there like land rush and special family. You may hear these, they may be specific to TLDs out there. The way they start opening up names before they go to general availability, which is when anyone can get whatever they want, rules they've set out. The two phases involved here are sunrise and trademark claims. And everything here is a protocol built over the secured web. So sunrise refers to the opening of the TLD to trademark holders first. When a TLD goes out there, and a TLD is going to allow others to register names in them, not all of them do, they have to have a period of time where they let trademark holders come in names first. At that point, the registry supplies the TMCH, the list of domain names that are being registered so that they're in the trademark clearinghouse. And coming back, the registry will get a list of trademarks that are no longer being reserved. In this case, the trademark holder will talk to the TMCH. These are, I want you to protect my name or not protect my name, and then they can retract that. During trademark claims, things look different. Anytime that someone registers a name during the trademark claims period, there's a notification sent saying that your name may be a trademark or looks like a trademark, and there may be a concern about that. So it supplies the trademark clearinghouse, the list of domain names that are registered that got the warnings, and the registry gets back a list of labels corresponding to other trademarks to watch out for. There's basically, this is a warning period, there's not necessarily going to be action taken on this, but chance that someone may say that that's my trademark, you can't have it. And again, this slide shows the interaction with the registry. During sunrise on top, there's the revocation list, and then during claims, it becomes a do not DNL, I forget now what the L stands for. Do not list. Do not list. Because I have list there also. Domain name. I'm sorry. Sorry. Domain name list. It's almost got through the entire deck without screwing up an acronym. Domain name list. So the new claims, we get a different list back. All along that the registry is actually feeding back to the trademark clearinghouse, these are names that have been effectively allocated. And one thing we get the... So that's what goes on in this protocol. This protocol, actually, if you go through the internet draft that's written on this, it's incredibly well done. I have to admit, I have to say a really well done ASCII art diagram of this, which is amazing that I could never get back. But anyway, so we've actually walked through all of them already. Extensible Provisioning Protocol, the way to register names. DNS and DNSSEC, which are the ways that the internet knows who has what and who is the protocol for seeing what's in what's registered out there. RDAP is the next version of that use in many places, but actually it's in use in some places, but not everywhere. Data escrow is where we copy the data off somewhere else, and trademark clearinghouse, which is where we protect trademarks from being
a just goet for Domain Cocoon Incorporated. TLDs need to offer premium pricing. Is there any way to Any way to integrate this into standardized EPP?
On top of my head, I do not know. The way to find out is to see if anyone has applied to document their extension that they're building right now. You have to see if they have that. There may or may not be extension listed in this. And in general, if there's a specific registry they're considering looking at, they would probably have to ask the registry if they have an extension, because no one's required to port the extensions they have.
There's two competing standards for the premium price, a version produced by Gavin Brown from Central Maine, competing standards. Both very good, both do very similar things. But in general, the premium pricing, it needs a lot more work.
Do you know if they've been submitted to the IETF?
There has been, but again, like I said, both versions have been implemented quite heavily.
Bro, the notification that's sent to ICANN.
I believe it's that it's been sent. If it comes from the TLD, it's that it's been sent. I don't think they're notified by the escrow holder that they've received. For one time, I was more involved with this, and I just don't recall which. I know that checking is done.
George Menardis from Dot Bill Registry. Yeah, I was too slow, but it seemed like you went over something on regarding the data escrow and the copy of which key?
Get a copy of the public key. And the public key is used to basically data that's been escrowed. In the sense that if ICANN meets the qualification getting the data from the escrow agent based on the rules, we get it, lock it that way, and make it available. Read it for whatever purpose we had to read it for.
You typing online? Do you have another question coming up? So that ICANN may verify the packet.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of the registry's version of this. But if the registrars are submitting escrows too, then it would be basically from the source of the escrow dump would have to. And again, preparing the slides, I was thinking about registry operations, not necessarily registrar operations. So,
Daniel Ebanks, .ky, Cayman Islands. Who is data? Thick records. Do they meet standard or the question that's being asked, brought up by the law enforcement community around the world? Does a thick...
Generally, you're after... It's hard for me to say anything about a policy or around the world, but if you're someone who needs to know the address of the person who's paying for this name, you would need the thick records. That answers your question. The thick has more information. A thin response would be that here's a domain name, and here are the name servers where it belongs, because I need to have them for the DNS to work. And then I would say, well, the name was sold through somebody else. And that would be a thin off there. If you ask the registrar in that case, they should have that thin registry set up. The thick registry, I would just go to the one place and get all that together.
In addition to that, with the thick who is, thin who is discussion, the one of the challenges that the internet community as a whole is a question about data privacy and the use of that data across different legal jurisdictions. One of the big challenges right now with the model is the need to extract the registrant data, propagate it across national boundaries. And that is something that actually more of an issue quite recently with the EU data protection safe harbor ruling that just came down. You can probably anticipate that there's going to be continued discussion on the question of thick versus thin, who is in the future. And all of it is can be seen as almost moot because of the development of RDAP and the requirements that are placed on GTLD registries to implement RDAP, days or some number of days after it's standardized within the IETF, recently has been.
Actually, David, just to clarify that, that mechanism...
You mean...
For various levels of access, so a law enforcement...
Exactly, yeah.
The requirement to adopt RDAP is not after the standards, after ICANN asks for it. So in other words, the operational profile going on work, after that's done, I think that's when the clock would start ticking. So they still totally have to have that model even defined.
Mohit Batra from National Internet Exchange of India. So I studied that IRDS Weirds is a working group that made the RDS that there's some profiling work left.
Right. So the RDAP protocol has defined a bunch of documents out there, and they have different queries out there. They have different, but it's also a sensible piece of work too. Not everything in the space spec will apply to all deployments, and in many cases, deployments will have more information they want. Example, I don't think it goes into the specifics of kind of contact information is in the response for the contact. Example, I don't believe it specifies there's a tech contact for a name. We want to have an operator. You want to have a tech contact for a name. The protocol doesn't say a tech, but we have to say a profile. A tech contact is going to have this type of. Now, where it says that, operational profile, that's basically someone says, here is specification for the protocol, but here is how I'm going to run it. And I know that in, I think, Belgium started an operational profile for their implementation of RDAP. ICANN has one that's actually in play. I think its profile has been put out there for review, and that's what will be discussed session this week. And to give you a reason for this to really be there, the RARs have a totally data. They manage data differently than the names do, same protocol. So that gives where, if you imagine the difference between names and the names in C, gives you your operational profile.
The protocol RDAP is not operational for...
I don't know of any name, main name TLD that has a server run. The reason why I'm looking around is that ICANN is not the only place for main names, TLDs. There's ccTLDs out there. RARs are operating RDAP, names, the number space, rather. In domain names, the place I know that's the furthest advanced is Belgium, but I may not know of someone ahead of them. But I know Belgium has done a lot of work.
Ed, a clarifying question from online. RDAP uses 440S, or does it use a different port?
Oh, RDAP uses HTTPS protocol. Whois uses port 43. Right. Well, that's Whois. RDAP doesn't have its own port number. It runs on top of the HTTPS protocol through its port. Yeah, but I think HTTPS actually has a protocol.
443.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
Oh, slide number 9. My question is, where does the privacy proxy...
those would be functions which probably be associated with a registrar, I'm guessing. The registrar may say, if you register a name with me, I won't let anyone know it's you. It's some other place.
So privacy and proxy services.
You or?
There are two of them, but they are equivalent.
I've actually never had experience with the two of them, so I wouldn't know. I used to run into the places where things were hidden, but I never bothered to. I never looked at it from their point of view. I didn't look at how they do the work.
So. Okay. Proxy is like a legal entity that actually takes your place as the registrar. So if anyone wants to find out about your privacy, a registrar will just...
I believe that we're out of questions. We're out of slides.
I want to thank you, Ed, for the presentation. As some of you have been warning, we are actively seeking feedback for the series. So please, before you close up your laptop, as of how this presentation went, how we could do better, if there's other topics you'd like to see, hear about it. And David, we'll turn it over.
Just want to thank everyone for attending. We have one more session. This is the session that follows this one, I guess in about, what is it?
It's half 45 minutes, actually. We've got
45 minutes until the next session.
So we've got some time here, extended tea,
right.
Maybe.
But the next session is actually a new one from a new one that's being done the first time here in Dublin on the root server system. It's being presented by, yes, Dwayne Wessels of VeriSign, who is a member of the Root Server System Advisory Committee, also one of the Root Server operators. So if that interests you, please come back at, 3:30? 3:45. Thank you very much.
And if also you'd like to stay here,
you're free. You don't have to leave.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.